Hildegard von Bingen knew how to pray. Born just over 1,000 years ago in Germany, Hildegard was a Christian mystic, a Benedictine abbess, a writer, a composer, a philosopher, a healer, a prophet, a reformer. She was also considered to be the founder of scientific natural history in Germany. An extraordinary life. I hold her up today not for all her accomplishments, but for her inner strength to keep going despite the obstacles that life gave her. Because she was both a visionary, a mystic, and a rational person. I hold her up because she spoke to those in power and facilitated change in her community. I'm thinking of the people, like the young men and women who are facing harm and challenge in North Dakota, and I'm thinking of people here in BC who are standing up to the established forces like energy corporations and banks and governments to say no for the sake of the earth and all her creatures and for 7 times 7 generations yet to come, which is almost 1,000 years. Looking with the long lens of time, this world has always been made up of humans who were working to keep the status quo and a few humans who had a vision of something different. Change is constant and often experienced as excruciatingly slow. Maybe this is the way of the world. I simply use Hildegard as yet another example of a human being who made the best of her circumstances, who was moved by a deep sense of calling, who spoke up for her vision of the green forces of life. Even through deep personal doubt, she spoke up because she believed it was God's will and therefore her duty. Ordinary and yet quite amazing. Amazing for one who was tithed to the church by her family at 8 years old and walled up in an abbey, literally walled up, enclosed. She lived with Jutta, an older woman, in 2 small rooms in a tiny walled courtyard. I read you an excerpt from the novel Illuminations by Mary Charette about the morning after she was walled up. When the night finally waned, fragile, glimmering, beaconed. The drapery had concealed a doorway leading into another small chamber graced with a high window, its panes made of polished horn. And glory of glories, beneath that window was a low door. My heart exploded. Had I discovered an escape? Could I flee into the forest, follow the river to find my way back home? With one backward glance at sleeping Judah, I let the curtain fall back into place and I crept towards the door. Palms sweating, I undid the wooden latch, tugged it open, and rushed through. Scabby stone walls reared up in front of me, as high as a tall man standing on another man's shoulders. This was no passage to freedom. Only a narrow courtyard with a smelly drain and broken cobblestones. But when I arched my neck as far back as I would go, I saw the pale morning sky, as blue as hope. And if I stood perfectly still and pricked my ears, I could hear the 2 rushing rivers below. 2 branches whispered secrets while the wind stirred my hair. And then, oh wonder, a russet-colored beech leaf swirled down on the breeze to nestle in my cupped hand. The most beautiful thing I would touch that day. I broke down, wailing for my mother, pleading and sobbing until I thought my yearning could summon her out of the cold air. Yet, if in answer to my desolation, a golden orb came floating, and in the midst of that pulsing sphere, I saw her, a face bathed in tenderness, the mother of my deepest longing, she who gave me all the love I craved and more. Beloved, she said to me, don't give up hope. When the time is ripe, I will set you free. You are the seed. The anchorage is the husk. Here you will grow and grow and grow until you grow too large for this place, and then it will burst and you will step forth. Three decades of prayer and study and composition, her companion Judah died, and Hildegard was elected abbess of the monastery by her peers. She continued to have the visions that had started when she was three. Modern interpreters think that some of her visions were the result of what we would call today migraines. Of course, 1,000 years ago, medical knowledge was different than today, as was the interpretations of physical experience. I would not like to discard entirely her interpretations of her visions, as we cannot know all the factors involved. Brain chemistry being a fairly new phenomenon, even modern doctors cannot entirely rule out what might be true vision and what might be hallucination. When she was 42, she was told by God, who she often saw as a woman, to write her visions down, which she did over the next 10 years. Hildegard was what we would term today an environmentalist, inspired by earth-based religions and a holistic healer. She saw the world as a fiery veritas, a fiery greenness. In her divine work, she writes as the voice of this super greenness, to quote her, I, the fiery life of divine essence, am aflame beyond the beauty of the meadows. I gleam in the waters, and I burn in the sun, the moon, and stars. With every breeze, as with invisible life that contains everything, I awaken everything to life. The air lives in greenness, viriditas. And in the flowers, waters flow as if alive. The sun, too, lives in his light. And thus I remain hidden in every kind of reality as a fiery power. Now, Hildegard expected God, whether it was male or female, expected God to expect her to fulfill these visions. And when she did not or was blocked by the church from fulfilling her commitment, she often fell indescribably ill, immobilized in some cases. If one's expectation to move your community to a new location, as Hildegard's was, and you either feel unprepared or ill-equipped or thwarted in making it happen, there will be a consequence that comes from your own thinking, your own thoughts. In her case, she got ill and literally couldn't move. In fact, no one could move her, which convinced the abbot that it probably was God's will that she moved to a different monastery, and so he stopped putting up the roadblocks. And then, of course, Hildegard was miraculously able to move again. Most of us might get sick as a result of not achieving our expectations, or at least despairing or depressed, not wanting to get up in the morning. It's a sort of a form of immobility. And you're probably familiar with that saying, I think I got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning. It's a good phrase. It tells us a lot about how we think, and how we think is our expectations. I'm coming to understand even more deeply every day that all our expectations are fulfilled. So how well do you know your own thoughts? Do you listen to your thoughts? Really notice them? Are you in control of your thoughts or at the mercy of them? If you have had the opportunity to observe your thoughts, you can discover why you do the things that you do. You can discover why you feel that you got out of bed on the wrong side. You can begin to change or adjust your expectations. No one is in charge of your thoughts but you. Of course, this doesn't mean that we're not all being brainwashed by television, but even though we are influenced by the things we read and the people in our lives, the things we hear, the things we see, it is still you that chooses, that can control your own thoughts. Your thought form informs your expectation, which informs your action. So if you wake up in the morning and your thoughts are grumpy thoughts, fill it in for yourself, then it's a gray day, I don't like gray days, therefore I expect I'm going to have a gray day, which means I'm going to feel unmotivated and perhaps sad, and gravity is going to feel heavy, and I'm going to feel like I'm moving through thick water. Now, at any point, if you are able to notice, and it's not easy sometimes, to notice that sequence of thoughts, you have an opportunity to choose something different. Insert something different into your thinking. When I was younger, I thought that positive affirmations, the kind you do in front of the mirror with a sort of a tense smile on your face, were useless. But I think slightly differently now, because I understand now that those thoughts that I have, my thoughts, are a pattern. And I have a lot of thoughts that just keep happening every day in a pattern. And I can change those. Although it takes effort, it takes willpower, attention, and choice. I choose when I'm aware. I choose to live with a sweet expectation of life. That is an important choice. It means I choose to form my thoughts along the lines of a gentle hopefulness that all will be well and all manner of thing shall be well. A simple prayer from another mystic. It's more than just positive thinking. It takes into account the longer lens of time. It takes into account my powerlessness and my willpower. It takes into account what I do not know and what I cannot know. It takes into account my strength and my weakness. It's not a forceful prayer. It doesn't demand anything. It requires a strength of surrender. The surrender at the edge of all effort, that hallelujah point, as Leonard Cohen so eloquently sings. There is a quality of surrender in that prayer, in those thoughts, almost as if your palms open like a flower opening. It's there in that sweet point when the heart can finally open once again. And one enters into that larger, longer story of life. Then your prayer is a surrender to the all in all, the fiery greenness of life, the invisible in the visible world, the unknown, knowable reality. May all be well, and all manner of thing be well. And we will not, we choose not to give up hope. It is the gentle surrender, the patient surrender, the choice of a sweet expectation.